Hobart's the company?
Hobart was the name of the company, a German company that came in into that town to build the prefabricated barracks for the soldiers. They were taking trees, so this area was full of trees. It was a beautiful country. And we took the trees and we put them through machinery to cut them into boards and then to plane them, to cut them into the size and build parts of the barracks. As prescribed, they had plans and everything was numbered, etc. And the memories from that camp were the worst, because this was the first labor camp that you knew almost that there's no possible way that you can survive it.
What's the name of this camp, do you
know? All I know is the Hobart. And
how long were you there?
I was there about a year, and what was amazing to me that in spite of all this difficult time, most of us survived that camp. The ones that didn't survive is because of the Gestapo people, the people that watched us there, who has trained dogs that torn apart people. You either, you didn't live through that only because you were either shot or torn apart by dogs for not working as they wanted you. So it was fear constant. Winter time was horrible. We had a stove in the middle of the barrack that we used to pack it with sawdust. They didn't give us wood. So we developed the kind of a stove that was like a barrel within a barrel.
You developed it, you made it yourself.
We worked it out somehow. I don't know who was the inventor of it, otherwise we wouldn't have the heat. Because you had to try to keep it on all night, because the barrack itself, it didn't have any insulation. It was very cold, we didn't have clothes to keep warm. So the inside barrel used to be removable. And what you did, you put a little pipe in the center, you packed the sawdust in, and then when you lit it from the inside, the flame used to burn that wood all night long, because it was so packed so hard, it was so difficult for it to burn. It would stay all night on. And that pot belly, that looked like a pot belly stove, kept us warm. And if somebody was able to steal some potatoes, and they used to peel it, I used to be able to pick up those peels from the potatoes, put them against the stove, bake them, and this is what maintained me in addition to that little media food that we used to get. This is why today, when I eat potatoes, I always peel it. People say, baked potatoes, you eat with the skin. I can't eat the skin, because it reminds me of it, and I couldn't do that.
Was the food like in the other camps? Or? And what happened when you got sick under those conditions in the cold?
You didn't get sick, because you have to understand that they picked the strongest and the most resistant one to work in there. So nobody died of sickness.
That's incredible.
You worked, and when you worked, you kept warm and you managed. And you ate whatever you got and you managed. I don't remember anybody being sick in that camp, but this was only the first one. We still had the strength.
Were there attempts for sabotage or escape?
Not in this camp. In this camp, we were watched like hogs. We were so scared of those dogs. This is the one thing that we were very afraid of. But we stayed there for a while, and from there, they took the whole group and transported it to a place in Poland where the steel mills used to be. They used to build over there, I think, airplanes too. In Polish, it's called Stalowa Wola, because this is like steel mills in Pittsburgh. And the name of the town was Mielec. Now, Mielec was known as one of the big camps in Poland. This is the camp that they tattooed on my hand, KL, which means Concentrationslager, in English would be concentration camp.
Oh. And you still have it?
And I still have it on my hand. And the KL was tattooed, so we, who were the slaves of the Germans, were not able to walk out through the gate because there were Polish workers there, and there were German, and everybody had to show their arm. And you couldn't remove a tattoo. But when they tattooed, of course, they weren't too hygienic, and many of my friends had a swollen arm for weeks from the infections, but it healed up.
This was a larger camp?
This was a large camp. They used to bring transport from all over Poland.
What kind of work was going on there? What kind of labor was going on?
Oh, every morning they used to take us out and put us into a factory where we were making aeroplanes for the Germans.
Everyone there was making
aeroplane parts. This is the first place where I worked on the German Messerschmitts and German Heinkels.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part where I was made to be an inspector of parts by the Germans through the influences of the head of Kahal from my little town.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I think I mentioned it, I was sick, and to save me, they were trying to work out so I will be able to do work which is...
Oh, at this camp
like,
you were
at
sick?
That camp I got very sick.
And
this
was
the
medical
only
care
time.
At this camp? Any medical care for people who got sick?
Nobody would go for medical care. You knew that if you went for medical care to Germans, this was your end. So either you had somebody helping you or you worked till you dropped dead.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that went to medical care, we know didn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
They were experimenting on them, and we knew already by then what was going on, and you stayed away from it.
They were experimenting at this camp that you were
at? Not that I know.
They sent them to somewhere else.
If you would read the book, The Survivor,
mm-hmm.
I think Jack Eisner, the man who wrote that book, tells about the way it was in that camp. It was rough. But you lived with barracks and barracks of other Jewish people. And there were, as far as I remember, there were only Jewish workers there.
Mm-hmm.
The people in charge of the camp were Jewish, working for the Germans. I, myself, truly believe that they were all working for the good of the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stressing it because many people will tell you that the kapos, I don't know if you heard the expression, C-A-P-O, Kapo,
mm-hmm.
Kapo, who were either the head of the barrack,
Jewish
or
the
Jewish,
barrack, yeah.
Or the head of a group that works. The Kapos usually were considered traitors, not in this camp. I was just a poor worker. Even as an inspector, I never was in any position to help anybody. I was lucky because I was working for a German who was an inspector in there who saved my life a couple of times. But I presume that it's very possible that in some of the camps there were people who, to get an extra bowl of soup or extra ration of food, were brutal to their co-workers,
mm-hmm.
to the other Jews that were with
mm-hmm.
them. I didn't come across it.
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that I knew that were bad were in Germany, when I was in German concentration camp, were the Germans who were in charge of the barracks, who were in charge of the work groups.
They were
brutal. They weren't. There were Germans who were in camp because of their political views,
mm-hmm.
or because they were homosexuals, or because they were murderers, or etc. They
mm-hmm.
had different color triangles. We were identified by a triangle and number. My triangle was red. We were considered political prisoners.
Oh.
The number you
and
wore.
And a yellow star also?
No more.
Oh.
When you were in the camp, you had a red triangle,
mm-hmm.
which is political prisoner, and a number. You had it on the left breast and the right and the right leg.
Mm-hmm.
So on your pants you had a number, and your shirt you had a number, and that's all you had. You had pants and shirt and wooden shoes. But this is, I'm talking already when we were in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
In Poland we still wore our clothes.
Your own clothes?
Yes, mm-hmm. whatever you had left. And you were Yellow Star still,
mm-hmm.
and you were still, still you were a prisoner, mm-hmm. you were still a prisoner.
How long were you in that camp in Poland?
I would approximate about a year.
Then you were moved to Germany?
From there they put us into boxcars and moved us to Germany, and that's where I wound up. Well, first,
and
on the way we stopped in another camp in Poland, which was Wieliczka, near Kraków.
Mm-hmm.
There were salt mines, and we worked in the salt mine. It was a transition camp. And I was working in the salt mine, making also aeroplane parts, small parts that they used to bring out from the salt mines. I think it was, must have been during the war with Russia at that mm-hmm. time, because it was a war effort. And they were afraid of the planes coming in, and so they went underground.
And that's the third camp as well.
This was the third work camp in Poland. From there, they put us into boxcar and took us to Flossenburg Vernichtungslager, which is the German final solution camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that had to be already in 1941, beginning 42. I'm approximating
right.
the date, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But we were there for a short time working, and well, the things that remains in your mind when we came to Flossenburg Vernichtungslager, when we get off the box cars, the first thing that we saw is entrance to the camp. The entrance of the camp was very elaborate iron work with following words on it: Arbeit macht frei. The work makes you free.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand then what it meant. If you work hard enough, you die, and then were you free.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what, it was a final solution camp with the ovens, with the smoke constantly going out of the chimneys.
There?
We were working there. We were working in...
what kind of work?
Well, they had stone quarry,
mm-hmm.
and in the stone quarry they hid an aeroplane factory again. So we're expert aeroplane factory workers, so they put us to work there. I don't know why I was chosen. And well, first of all, you have to understand what happened. We went through that gate and they put us into a separate, isolated barrack. Nothing in the barrack except an empty hall. Before you walked into that hall, they took off all your clothes and you were nude for 2 days in that barrack. It was the dehumanizing experience. You didn't know if you're going to be killed, and this is why they took it away, or what is going to happen. Anyhow, they shaved us. We had to shave each other. And they inspected us for any pest, for, you know, by then you had already bugs and whatever in the hair, and you were infested possibly. So you washed and you shaved for 2 days and you cleaned, and then they gave each one a jacket, a pair of pants and shoes, wooden shoes. And this was your uniform, stripe uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Then they divided us into two groups. And I was one of the group that was sent out from there to work on the railroad. And in that experience, I was told to work on a machine to dig the ground. I don't know what they call it. It's one of those machines that has a digger in front and a shovel to pick up the dirt or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to operate it, or you didn't survive, so you learned. So I worked on that. But it was a short period of time. It was less than a month that I worked there, and they sent me back to Flossenburg. There were other friends that from there went to Buchenwald.
Mm-hmm.
I found it out after the war when I met the guys that I was with. I wound up back in Flossenbürg working on aeroplanes. And because of my experience, again, I became an inspector on parts.
Is this where you did your sabotage?
And this is where I did my sabotage, and this is where I got my leaks.
Mm-hmm.
But Flossenbürg was truly a final solution camp. People were dying like flies.
And you knew it when you got there? Is that the first time you
knew
it?
You could see it.
Is that the first time you knew when you got there? That the final solution was indeed what it was?
That's right, because you saw it. We were all, in Poland I didn't hear any rumors, but we were in Germany, we heard the rumors already. We knew that their goal is to kill, but still we were hoping. We knew that the Russians were coming from one side because they moved us because of the Russians progressing
right
up. If I would look up the history book, I most probably could find out what date it was, because the Russians were taking back to Poland, and we were moved. So we were in that Flossenbürg camp, and there was stone quarry, and you used to go in the morning, and group was to go and break the stone, and the other group was to go into the barracks where they were building parts of airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Till the time came in to move us again. This time to move us because the war is getting close, because we could hear already the guns, we could see at night the fire in the skies, and we knew the war is getting close and we had hopes. And they evacuated the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we wind up in a boxcar with handful of grain to feed us on the way. And the boxcar was, the whole train was attacked by the American planes who thought it was an army transport.
Mm-hmm.
And we took our jackets off and we waved it. And we were lucky. The pilot must have saw the jackets.
Yeah, right.
And he stopped and he went again over the train, and this time didn't shoot at it, just dropped a bomb on the locomotive.
Mm.
And the train couldn't move. And we started running and the Germans started shooting and we stopped. And they created a column of
Germans.
No, the Germans took us and created a column of slaves walking on the road.
Do you know where you were?
I had no idea at that time.
Yeah.
I found out later it was not far from Schwandorf in Germany and Bayern, because 5 days later, after walking day and night, we were liberated by the American spearhead.
Where was that?
This was in Bayern and Germany.
And you were you
I was with the group walking on the road.
You were on the road when you were liberated.
3 days, no, 2 days before. Already 3 days on the road.
Mm.
I was very tired, and anybody that stepped to the side of the road was shot. And I said to my friends that I worked with, because we were trying to keep together, I said, I'm going to the side. I don't want to have any problems for anybody else. I'm tired. Let them shoot me and finish. And one grabbed me on one arm, the other on the other arm. As a matter of fact, when I retired, one of them was here.
Mm.
His name was Kozhenik, and he came to
my... Nice.
40 years later, he came to see me honored as I retired. And they said, no, you walk with us. And they were holding on to me, and for 2 days more we walked.
2 days. Okay.
And then suddenly they put us into a forest. They set us up on one side and the machine gun on the other side. They were going to shoot us, and suddenly we hear the grumbling of the heavy vehicles. And what did we see? The American tanks
just
coming into the thing, and Germans vanished. There was nobody there.
Oh my goodness.
And we dispersed and we ran. And I, with a couple of friends, we ran into a little village, and we went on top of the... into the attic of one of the houses there.
You didn't know they were Americans?
We knew they were Americans, but there was still war. They were shooting here, they were shooting there. Suddenly you saw Germans coming back, then you saw American coming. And we were up there on the attic, lying on the straw and looking out through the holes of this, actually it wasn't an attic, it was a shack or whatever it was. And we saw the Germans, and then we saw the Americans, and we saw the Germans. And then we saw that there's no more Germans, there were only Americans, then we walked out. And our first meal, we walked into one of the houses and we just took whatever we wanted and we ate.
First time you'd eaten in days?
First time in days. For 5 days we had a little handful of grain. We
ate grass.
Was the
march 5 days?
5 days. We ate grass to maintain ourselves. And one of my friends ate too much. He ate the speck. Speck is bacon, raw bacon.
Uh-huh.
And he got sick and he died.
He died from the... Oh, wow.
And we were free. And we went into one of the villages. So we took one of the houses. There was no Germans in it. There was nobody there. They escaped. And we stayed there, and when we needed food, we went into the marketplace, we took the food, and if anybody stopped us, they knew not to, because some of the guys were totally brutal. This was the first time that I realized that we became animals, because some of the guys, and I was with the group too, stayed on the road and looking for the Gestapo, for the SS. And believe me, some of these Gestapo didn't live through the experience of being found out. They had also tattoo under the arm.
The Gestapo?
They were tattooed under the arm. So
what, SS or?
I never saw it myself.
I never knew that.
But they were. That's what I was told.
Hmm.
So after a while, I saw that this kind of a life, all will lead is to total destruction, because you were dehumanized. It is time to try to become something.
Well, how long were you in the house?
Days.
Oh, days, okay.
Days. And we just... They used to call it organized. There were guys that went out and they got a truck someplace. And they put some stuff on the truck, whatever they could from the houses. And we went to a big town. We went to Frankfurt am Main.
How many of you were there?
We were six guys.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture someplace, I don't even know where. And we went to that town, we walked into a hotel in Frankfurt am Main, there was a Hotel Hamburg, the things that you remember. It was right near the railroad station. We took a room, we all stayed in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And we started drinking. You got up in the morning, you drank. And you went to sleep drunk, and you got up next morning and start drinking again. After a week, I said, that's horrible. You can't live like this. By then, you wanted to go someplace where it will make sense, that the life will make sense, because you were free. You knew you were free. You had identification, which identified you.
You did?
Yes, they gave us identification.
Who? You
the Americans. And they used to call it the former concentration camp laborers, or in German they call it ehemalige Konzentrationslager Häftlinge, but we're going to explain it, all right? So we stayed there for a few days like this, and I said, no, I know that my brother is in Palestine. I'm going to go to Palestine. The only way I can go to Palestine is go to Italy, and somehow I jump through the sea. Who knew what, where? And I walked into, just walked out of the hotel.
The other five stayed?
Yes, they stayed there.
They
were dealing. They went out and they were buying things and they were selling things.
They were
making money. You were making money.
You didn't
need money in the beginning. In the beginning, I lived without a penny in my pocket, never walked hungry. If I went into any restaurant, any place, and showed the card that was in Germany, it was for free.
Mm-hmm.
When I went on the bus to go to Italy, I showed my card and I didn't have to pay, it was for free. Because we had no money, we worked for Germany.
An arrangement set up by the Americans?
We didn't ask.
We just did.
We just did. You had to survive. It was a drive to survive. You were alive. And I was fighting this because I didn't want to become like an animal. I mean, it was total disregard for life, mine mm-hmm. or anybody else's. Mm-hmm. You have to understand also, there was a short time there that I got involved, I don't know if it was CIA or whatever, people from American forces which went around to search houses for ammunition, because there were still resistance groups around and there were still Germans that were holding on to their arms. And we used to go around with them and search their houses, and we used to find out who had what, where, what connections. But all that led to being inhuman. Mm-hmm. I wanted a normal life. I was still dreaming that I'm going to find my brother and maybe he knows about the rest of our family. Mm-hmm. There's no possible way that you could correspond with anybody. So I picked myself up and went on that bus. And I was going on the bus and I wound up in Munich, which is München in Germany, south, going in the right direction. And near Munich, it was a little camp, refugee camp, which is called Feldafing, where the refugees used to get together and try to find each other. Mm-hmm. And I found a couple of friends who I knew from Krakow, and they were going back to Krakow, and Mark came out with me, and I said, no, I'm not going back to Poland. I requested, when they were giving identifications, I got a passport, which I still have someplace, which says that I was stateless. Mm-hmm. I did not want to be a Polish citizen, I did not want to be a German citizen by the virtue of being born in Germany. I wanted to be stateless mm-hmm. because I belonged no place, because these people didn't want me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go just to Palestine to be with my brother and to find out where's the family and try to make a new life. Mm-hmm. As a former Zionist, I knew that my place was in Palestine. We were planning as a family to go there. Mm-hmm. So I thought that this would be. Mm-hmm. So from Feldafing, I found another two guys that decided to go with me. And the three of us are going to the border, which is between Germany and Austria, so we can go through Austria and between Austria and Italy to go to Italy. And we are seeing a train that goes through the border, and we ran over, there's a boxcar train, and mm-hmm. my two friends jumped on the train. And before I had a chance to jump, I hear shots, and I see an American guard on the border, and he's stopping the train, and I figured that if I go into the train, they're going to catch my friends, so I stopped. And I went back, and my friends continued. I was alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the border there, and I see a group of other Jews that were trying to do the same thing.
Jump the train, go on the train, yeah.
And I see that group and they speak a language that I didn't understand. They were Romanians. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met my wife.
Oh my goodness. And how big was that group? A large group?
There was a group of maybe 20 people. No, less. Oh, about 15 of them. And I'm one Polak and they are all Romanian. And I say, what you guys are doing here? And we spoke Yiddish. And they say, we're stuck. We can't go no place. I said, wait a second. There has to be a way. We are no, Americans are here. Right. I said, any one of you speak English? And that little girl says, I speak English.
That was Libby.
So I said, come on, let's go. And we went, and we got passes for everybody. And we got cars for food. And they put us into the best hotel there. This was Zelam Zee. And it was a beautiful resort. And the Americans said to us, these passes don't mean a damn thing, but they have an American stamp on it, and maybe nobody will know and they'll let you through. And next day we picked ourselves up and we went to the border and we went with the train and they let us through.
This is to Italy or to Austria?
To Austria this time. Right. And we didn't know there was another border, French border there, that we had to go through. And they sprayed us with the dust to get rid of the lies, because they didn't know we had them or not, and the degrading again, but we got sprayed and we got this. And we were going up to the border of Italy and we couldn't get through the border of Italy. And we got stuck there, the group, and we see that we are stuck, we don't know what to do. And again, this is the first time I met the American night fighters. what are the night fighters you
ask? I was just coming to
the first time I met black American drivers of trucks.
Oh.
And I figured they are black to be night fighters. I mean, who knew what the heck it was? I don't remember if I ever saw black people before. I didn't imagine it. Here I saw American in uniforms black and talked to one of them through the, again, interpreter, my wife, future wife. I didn't know then that she's talking to my wife. And he said, you know what? We are transporting Italians to Italy. In Italy, there's an English, there are English fighters. And part of that group is the Palestine Brigade, which are the soldiers from Palestine, Jews.
Yeah.
You get on this truck, and you make believe you're Italians. Don't say nothing,
don't
just stay there. And you're going to Italy. And we went to Italy. And they brought us to Italy, and we met the Palestinian Brigade. And this is why... You know, I'm telling you, days and weeks of life and minutes. But this is in Italy where I found out that we are human beings because the Italians were very nice to us. When somebody said we were Jews, they said, what do you mean Jews? Where do you come from? You are, have a nationality. I don't care about religion. And that was, we were human again. But we were in a refugee camp there, and a shaliach from Palestine came in and brought a message from my brother, because my brother was looking for me too.